You're listening to 10 Points, a podcast with your hosts, Ash and Nicholas, where all the talk is Canadian Highlander, our favorite format from the best trading card game ever, Magic the Gathering.
Hey everyone, it's me, Nicholas.
And me, Ash.
And today we're discussing packages. We're going to give a description of what they are, what kinds of packages there are, and what decks you'll use them in.
But before we do that, we need to talk about our best card from, and today our best card is from a weird set. It's Portal 3 Kingdoms.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot in this set, but there are some, like, super solid ones. Like
Five. So, we'll give our best. We're just going to tell you all five of them.
I'll start. I picked Ravages of War. I think it's just one of those cards that, when it resolves, it's probably game over. Because the decks that want to play it are really good at abusing that and getting ahead to the point that they either have mana in other forms or just are ahead on board, and then they destroy all lands and you're just trying to catch up the rest of the game.
Yeah, if there is much of the rest of the game.
Yeah, usually it's a pretty swift end after that.
Yeah, my best card from this set, I'll admit I'm a bit biased because I'm in the middle of foiling out a creature-based toolbox combo deck, but my favorite card from this set is Imperial Recruiter. What's the white one? Recruiter of the Guard. Guard, but power. Power. It's a very useful card for toolbox decks, or even decks that play smaller Silver Bullet packages, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But a very useful in creature combo decks or toolbox decks where you need very specific things at very specific times, and they get to be a body that can go get those and be used for something else later, like a birthing pod.
Yeah, there's also, like, fringe scenarios, and, I mean, I suppose it's very rare, but, like, if you have, like, a Neoform and, like, a 2-drop, you can Neoform your 2-drop into Imperial Recruiter to get your, like, let's say you need a Karmic Guide. You can't Neoform into the Karmic Guide, but you can tutor it up using different ways, so it's also nice to be on a creature body so that you can take some of those more rare lines to get cards that you need.
Yeah, for sure. The other cards out of this set that are worth mentioning is Three Visits, which is another copy of Nature's Lore. What are the other two? Imperial Seal, which is like Vampiric Tutor, but worse and slower. And Capture of Xing Zhao, which is Time Warp?
Yep.
Temporal Manipulation?
Getting reprinted, isn't it?
Yes. It was reprinted in From the Vault, I think. It's still expensive.
It's super expensive.
I think it is getting reprinted.
I've played blue-green taking extra turns every once in a while just for the sake of having fun and making other people not have fun. And that card can do that is just blue-white. Absurd. Yeah, but it's less fun.
Fair.
I want to take, like, 30 minutes on my turns and not allow my opponent to have a turn. Blue-white, like, lets them think they have a turn. They just don't get to resolve anything. Blue-green turns cuts out the middleman and just doesn't give them a turn.
If you want to spend 30 minutes on one turn...
Turns.
If you want to spend 30 minutes on one turn, I would suggest you go watch Paperlander number 8, where I play eggs.
Sure. Or one of the other Paperlanders in which Luke plays Storm.
Or another Paperlander where I play Sandra Bullock and struggle through it. Game I should have won much quicker.
If you want to watch us be bad at Magic, go watch some of the Paperlanders.
I did good in this last one.
Is that out? No, it's not.
It might be out by the time this is out. It could be.
Go watch the last Paperlander. If Ash did well, you'll know that it's out. If he did poorly, you'll know that it's just normal.
So, anyways, do you want to move on to the package discussion?
Yeah. So I think first we're both just going to give, like, a brief description of what we would describe it as. Usually when I think of a package, I think of, like, 2 to 10 cards that you are including in your deck that you maybe wouldn't normally include to give you, like, sort of a plan B. And we'll kind of, like, go more into, like, what that entails later. But something that, like, fundamentally changes the deck, you have to make changes around it, but it gives it, like, a solid extra plan that it can use to win the game.
Yeah, I kind of think of them, sometimes the word suite will be used interchangeably for some types of packages, but I usually think of them as a somewhat standardized list of cards you're going to be using. So for example, we talk about putting in a hand attack package into decks sometimes. We're talking about Thoughtseize, Inquisition of Cause, like Duress, and sometimes Hymn to Torak.
And
Mind Collective Twist. Brutality.
And Collective Brutality.
Well, Mind Twist if you have the points.
Yes.
And that's not all decks.
We're not talking... I mean
targeted.
Yeah. And we're going to be kind of talking about different types of packages, too. I generally kind of think of, like, hand attack packages as a little bit different than, like, a lands package, which we'll talk about both of those.
Yeah. Can I finish my definition now?
If you really want to.
I do. I think they're often somewhat standardized, at least the first couple cards on them. And then they often are optional in the type of deck you're playing. If it's not really optional, you wouldn't really consider it to be a package, in my opinion. I think it's more of an augmentation.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay, so we have a couple examples here. The first one actually on our list is Hand Attack, like we just briefly talked about. An example of when you may or may not play Hand Attack in a deck. Actually, we're going to bring up Paperlander again. The most recent Paperlander that we filmed is Paperlander number 9, so it may or may not be out by the time this releases. I'm not sure, depending on our release schedule. We have a player playing a black deck in that is not playing Hand Attack. And when they built the deck, I assumed they were. I thought they were playing the big three, Thoughtseize, Inquisition of Kozilek, and Duress, but they are not. And depending on the metagame, you might decide that those are valuable enough. So, like, there's a lot of control in the metagame, you might really want to play those. Or a lot of combo, you might also want to play those. But in a metagame against other decks that are looking to play to the board more quickly, those cards aren't very good. So, it's not essential to the deck's game plan. So, whether or not you decide to implement it is usually metagame dependent or just playstyle dependent.
Yeah, for sure. And packages are one of those things that... like Hand Attack is a really good example where you can sometimes kind of just get in this thought process of like, oh, I'm playing black, I automatically am including Thoughtseize, Inquisition, and Duress, and that can be like really dangerous. So it is really worth thinking about when building a deck, like, do I actually need these? Do these work with my game plan? Like, his deck was a pretty like low to the ground deck, so in its early turns it was spending most of its mana to play to the board. So trying to decide turn one if you want to play a one drop or a hand attack spell is generally not optimal, and especially if your meta doesn't really
isn't weak to hand attack,
then it might just be worth cutting it all together and focusing more on your game plan more than disrupting your opponents.
Yeah. Another example is in like certain blue aggressive decks, they don't always play counter spells. But that is an option that you can put a couple of in your deck if the metagame calls for it. So if I was playing, I don't know, what's a good blue aggro deck? That's not the one I just played.
Is it tempo?
Sure. Is it tempo? Well, okay.
No. Is it aggro?
Is it? Okay, you know, this is a bad example. Let's just say hypothetically.
Okay, mono blue or medium blue. The deck that we brewed.
Medium blue. That's a great, actually, that's a super good example. So not aggro, but medium blue. We talked a lot about how that deck really wants to play directly to the board and not really play counter spells.
Yeah, I think we were on, like, some number, but
I think we were on ones that few. Also did other things.
Yeah. And
like Supreme Will.
I think we were on Mana Drain, because that...
It gives you mana.
That works for our game plan, yeah.
But if you're in a metagame where there was a lot of combo happening... Or there was a lot of people wrathing the board, you might want to play a few counter spells. So, you know, you'd maybe look to play, like, if it's a more combo metagame, you might be looking to play Spell Pierce or, you know, other ones like that are not costing you much, but are interacting with them. But in combo, in control metagames, you might be looking to just play counter spell or, what's the, three mana one with that that stifles as well.
Disallow,
you might play that as well. Just options that, you know, they aren't your main game plan, but due to the metagame you want to include a package of them. So you wouldn't necessarily want to play, you know, 12 counter spells, but you might play 3 or 4 or 5.
Yeah, my philosophy has always been the best way to beat counter spells is with slightly fewer counter spells.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to counter all of their spells. You just need to, like, have the counterspell to force through that one threat or
in decks that are
In, playing to the board. When I'm talking about that, I'm talking about like mid-range decks. When Thassa's Oracle was 0 points and had just been printed, our entire metagame shifted to everyone playing blue control Thassa's Oracle decks. And we were doing a league at the time, so I was trying to be like really spiky and like win, but I was also very morally opposed to playing Thassa's Oracle, so I didn't go down that route. But for almost the entirety of the 8-week league, I played
Sultai
mid-range, and my like entire philosophy of the deck was just play like hand attack and just enough counter spells to force things through into the board and keep them from comboing. And I believe I got like third in that league. We've played two leagues. I got first in one of them and fourth in the other.
I think both times we've done those leagues, I came like, I was like the first or second person that didn't make prizing.
Like our most recent tournament. It's a very unfortunate fate that Ash holds.
Did we already talk? We had already talked about that. We talked about that in like the year end wrap up.
We did. Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, another thing that could fall into this discussion of packages is spot removal. Many decks, like control or mid-range decks, part of their primary game plan is playing a lot of removal, or some, like a decent amount of removal, so we're not really talking about those decks. But when you look at decks like Storm, Storm plays a... Would you like to talk about
it? Yeah, I was actually going to bring that up. That's part of the reason I brought up the year in tournament a second ago, is to kind of transition into this.
Segue into it.
Because I played Storm during that tournament, and I got second. But one of the biggest things I was contemplating when building that deck is, what interaction do I need to play? Because Storm is obviously a very proactive deck. I mean, your entire game plan is have all of your cards work towards this one goal to combo off. But there are a lot of troublesome creatures, and
for example, Collector Oof, Opposition Agent,
like a Scavenging.
Lion's Ash as well.
Yeah, Ava Mind Censor. Like, there's just so many creatures that you can't really afford to leave alive. So I had to like really think about, okay, am I playing removal in this deck that's not part of its game plan? So I ended up being on. I went with Bolt, Swords, and Abrupt Decay. And the Abrupt Decay was very important because I knew that there was going to be like a decent number, like a decent amount of control. So having a piece of removal that you can't interact with was really good. And that ended up winning me my semifinals game of the top 8.
Which was against Blue White Control?
Yeah, I was against a Blue White Control list that was playing
Mind Sensor. Right?
No. Rest in Peace.
Because he was on the Helm
combo.
Yeah.
And he got it both games. He managed to resolve it. And I was able to tutor up Abrupt Decay to kill it and then proceeded to combo through that.
I thought it was three games.
Both of the games that I won. I think he did get it all three games, but one of the games I didn't win. But all I know is that both games that I did win, I won by first removing a Rest in Peace.
I mean, that's just a testament, I think, to how much of a tournament happens before you walk in the door.
Yeah. A lot of any tournament is playing to the meta.
And constructing a good deck.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, Storm is a big example of when you're not playing a lot of removal, but you're playing some. I think aggro decks also fall into that category. You don't play a lot of removal that is just removal. Like, you play red ones will play a lot of burn, which is versatile. It can go to their face or go to creatures. But like medium red, notoriously aggressive deck. It, you know, in its lifetime has played both Flame Slash and Abrade as removal options that don't actually deal damage to the face. They're just removal and interaction options. But, you know, you need to play just enough that can hit X4s, and sometimes you need to be able to remove an artifact.
Mm-hmm.
So that's examples of when you would play specific packages that don't play to the game plan, but again, packages are all about the metagame.
Yeah. And like another example of like removal packages are like Ash played Eggs somewhat recently, and you were
Paperlander number 8.
Yeah, and you were on a portable hole.
This episode is a walking ad.
Yeah. Watch Paperlander. It's really entertaining. You're playing Portable Hole with the almost the exclusive reason being Collect Roof exists. So yeah. Having a piece of removal that you can tutor with your artifact tutors is just really strong.
Yeah, and part of that removal suite, because you know, similar to Storm, there are a lot of problematic creatures. There were two different removal spells that were in the deck that were specifically for Collector Oof, Opposition Agent, Aven Mind Sensor, and I think that was probably it. I don't know. There might have been another creature I was
working on. I mean, like Graveyard Hate. Like, creatures with incidental Graveyard Hate can be annoying.
Yeah. So, like Scavenging Ooze. And so, Portable Hole deals with the Scavenging Ooze's Deathrite Shaman, Collector Oof, and Pirate Spellbomb deals with the Aven Mind Sensor and Opposition Agent, both of which are tutorable options. So, while Pirate Spellbomb is often a mainstay in that deck normally, it's a part of a win just condition.
Kills them sometimes. Yeah,
and it just is an egg. You know, you play it as a way to deal with some of these creatures more than you use it to actually end the game.
Yeah.
So that's about it for the, like, the spell-based...
like kind of mainstay packages that a lot of decks auto include.
Yeah, which aren't even really packages in those decks. They're more just like these are the 12 counter spells
my game plan. Yes.
Yeah. But so now we're gonna move on to ones that aren't always part of a deck's main game plan, but are frequently implemented as, you know, this person's variation of this deck, or the metagame makes these cards good this current month. You know, we've talked about this too much, honestly.
Yeah, I mean... but
Urza Saga is what we're talking about. An Urza Saga package is a lot more specific as to what you can put in it. Obviously, the things that you can get with Urza Saga have to be either 0 or 1 mana. And your deck has to want to play Urza Saga and those cards. Now, a lot of decks don't get made much worse by just playing Urza Saga and 1 or 2 things, because most decks want... at least some 1 and 0 mana artifacts. Like, they will operate very happily with them. Oftentimes, that's just Sol Ring or Mana Crypt. But other decks, like, what's the... Death and Taxes plays it because it gets fast mana if they need it. It can go and get Shadow Spear. It can go and get a Skull Clamp. So... things that don't go in every deck, but will go in Urza Saga packages to, you know, like, you wouldn't play Shadow Spear without Urza Saga or Stoneforge Mystic, but because you can play those cards, you will include it in the package.
Yeah, I've played, I play a lot of midrange, Urza Saga fits really well into a lot of midrange decks, but there have been a number of midrange decks that I have change the list or form the point spread around having Urza Saga. Like, generally, not always, but generally if I'm playing Urza Saga, I want to have some mana rock that can replace it, because Urza Saga is great, but sometimes it just really sucks to, like, have this land that you know is only going to stay around for 2 turns. So if I'm playing an Urza Saga in, like, a mid-range deck, I'm almost always going to have a Sol Ring in my point spread, or a Moxen if you have access to one, just something to replace it. But then also, like, in Jund, I would never play Shadow Spear or Pyrite Spellbomb, but both of those cards are, like, cards that I heavily consider when I'm playing an Urza Saga in my deck, just because it provides... It makes Urza Saga that much better to have these other cards that by themselves are not amazing, but just, like, they're fine to draw, but having the options to go tutor for them with Urza Saga on its last mode just makes them and it that much better.
Yeah. Similar thing goes for Stoneforge Mystic, I think.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of decks... This might be a controversial opinion. I think a lot of decks that shouldn't play Batterskull that are not playing Stoneforge Mystic.
Oh, yeah. If you're not playing Stoneforge Mystic, Batterskull is...
there's a lot of decks that should not play it, but I see people do it all the time. So, you know, you could fight me on that if you want. But, even more so than that is Cauldron Complete. And I think the Stoneforge Mystic is... the biggest example we're going to talk about, well, second biggest example we're going to talk about, of the problems with playing certain types of packages. which is sometimes you draw the cards.
Yeah. And yeah, that's why, like, if you're, when you're including a package in your deck, you need to consider, like, if I don't draw, like, let's say, if I don't draw Urza's Saga, I mean, I know we're on Stoneforge now, but I guess, like, same thing. If I don't draw Stoneforge, do these other cards still work with my game plan? And with Urza's Saga, the answer is usually yes. They're one or zero mana, like, they're gonna do something. Like,
half of them draw a card.
Yeah, like, half of them draw a card. Shadow Spear, like, giving a creature lifelink is very rarely not relevant.
Trample also.
Yeah, trample as well. And the Hexproof ability comes up every once. It doesn't actually kill Thrun, because Thrun does not have Hexproof. He has...
Okay, hold on. Pause. I'm looking that up.
Okay, I don't even think we should pause.
Well, I just mean so we can edit out these keystrokes.
Oh, sure.
Ha! Oracle text.
Okay, maybe we should cut that out.
No. Editor, Court, you leave that in.
All right. So, yeah, Thrun, the card that Shadow Spear kills, and I am very... I knew that.
That is to say, Shadow Spear can remove Hexproof from your opponent's creatures.
It can remove Hexproof from your opponent's creatures.
It was just before Hexproof was a keyword.
Yeah, look up Oracle texts on old cards. Sometimes they're wrong. I'm going to be honest. I really, really thought that that had not been errated to be Hexproof. But I suppose it makes sense that it was.
Most of the time when the wording is exact, they just didn't have a keyword yet. They errated it.
Sure.
Most of the time. I think. Cough, Thorn Elemental.
Okay, back to what we were talking about, though. With Stoneforge Mystic... that one is generally much harder to make these things like Batterskull and Cauldra
Complete.
Cauldra Complete. It's much harder to make those cards work without Stoneforge. So sometimes it's worth just playing a Stoneforge package and not like just playing like Swords and Jitte, and like maybe like a Shadow Spear or whatever, and not Skull playing Hunt. And Skull like
Lion's Ash.
The cheaper equipment.
The ones you would play.
That if you draw, you can, like, it's still reasonable to, like, cast them. That being said, I mean, like, it's a kind of a meta thing, too. Like, you have to decide, is the upswing that you get from being able to have the play Stoneforge go get Batterskull and just, like, next turn you've slammed this giant creature for 2 mana and they're like, okay, well, now I don't know what to do. You have to decide if that's worth the downside of having the other cards.
Yeah, I mean... That is a huge thing to consider, and again, that's going to come up even more in another package we're going to talk about in a moment, but one thing about that is, in, you know, a lot of metagames, do you want to draw College Complete? No. What if you're playing a metagame that is notorious for, like, the boards get bogged up and people are draw going for a long time? Then it might be more okay to draw your College Complete, so it might be worth playing. I personally, like, I almost never play it, even in Death and Taxes. People yell at me all the time, and you know what? Go for it. But, you know, I just, every time I play it, I draw it, and then I'm like, well, this is garbage.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat.
And then I play a Stoneforge Mystic, and like, cool, Tutor, Bolt, and then I never get to activate my Stoneforge Mystic. Mm-hmm. So, like, I just only play stuff I can actually cast, which is sometimes Batterskull in Ancient Tomb decks.
Sure. Or, like, Soaring Mana Crypt decks.
Those are usually the same decks for me.
Sure. I mean, I guess usually those are the same decks for most people. though, maybe not as much anymore now that Mana Crypt is 5. It's a little bit harder slide that into a point spread.
I played a Mana Crypt deck recently for the first time since it got ticked up, and feels good. I understand why
it feels so good. Oh, man. Remember back when it was 2? Mana Crypt was 2. Gonna say that same
we are really on the same page today.
I feel like I talk about that way too much. I'm just like, oh, the good old days. Sol Ring was 3, Mana Crypt was 2.
Own a crypt when it was 2?
I did. For I have a curse where once I purchase a magic card, it gets the points increase. I bought a Mana Crypt, and then like almost immediately after that it went up, and then same thing with Time Walk. I bought my Time Walk when it was 6 points, and I was like, oh man, I've got like all these great things I'm gonna do, and then they're like, ah, it's 7 now. Like
a month later.
Yeah.
It's almost as bad, maybe worse, than when I was getting into Magic, like more competitive Magic, and I bought Modern Storm, and then they immediately, like the week after I bought it, they banned Gataxian Probe.
Oh no!
And I was like, my Storm deck, my Prowess deck. It was awful. Anyway, this is a podcast. Nice. This is a podcast about Canadian Highlander, so we can talk about that format.
Yeah, I suppose, you know.
Another thing that I have written here, because Nicholas wanted to talk about it, even though normally I'm the one who wants to talk about this card, is... What?
I didn't want to talk... I didn't want to talk about this card specifically. I wanted to talk about equipment packages as a whole.
And I called it a Stoneforge package.
You specified it to Stoneforge. Well, I said there's other reasons to play equipment packages.
Yeah.
And then you said open the armory, and I was like, well,
I wanted to talk about like the Batterskull Cauldron thing.
Sure.
Which is like a Stoneforge thing. It's not an open the armory thing. But Nicholas is pointing out some equipment decks play what's the one mana one that gets equipment? Gift of the Godhead? Is that Gift?
I have no clue. I think it's like, I can see this card in my head.
Neither of us play that much D&T. Yeah. This is like the only deck that, that and like blue-white equipment.
And then like the one mana one that eludes us, like a lot of those decks will play Enlightened Tutor. And it will often have other hits, but a lot of the time it's getting equipment.
Yeah. But, you know, all that to say... There are variations of equipment packages that aren't necessarily the Stoneforge package only, though they usually include it. Do you want to talk about the lands package?
Yeah. So if anyone has watched Paperlander 1 and 1 of... I played in the first Paperlander. I think it was the first Paperlander.
No. Well, the first one was before we called it Paperlander.
Okay. If anyone has watched...
In that one, Seth is actually playing kind of a lands package.
When he was on The Rock?
Yeah,
I was on Jund. Playing a lands package.
Oh, I thought you were talking
about... No, I was on Naya playing a lands package.
That wasn't against Seth?
I'm pretty sure it was, because I remember, strip locking
it was against Matt.
Okay, there's been two Paperlanders in which I have played a mid-range deck playing a lands package.
We're going to get fact-checked so hard.
I'm pretty sure I am factually correct, but that being said, earlier I said that Thrun didn't get turned off by Shadow Spear, so... Well,
that was... Okay, that's different from not knowing that and getting your living memory wrong.
If only there was a way for us to find out which Paperlander was... Okay, it doesn't matter. There have been...
You guys can check us on this.
Two Paperlanders in which I have played lands packages, and coincidentally, those are also the two Paperlanders in which I have gone 3-0. So, lands packages are pretty good. But a lands package generally is composed of Strip Mine, Wasteland, but that often goes in those decks anyway, an assortment of other utility lands, often including Urza's Saga.
Baseju.
Yeah, Baseju, like Field of the Dead, Krakus.
Sometimes Maze of Ith.
Yeah, sometimes Maze of Ith. Sometimes if you're going real deep, Dark Depths Thespian Stage.
I only say that
because I did play those in the Nihilist.
I miss those.
Like Primeval Titan. Renin 6, Ramunap Excavator. Like, you're playing...
Sometimes Oracle of Maldaia.
I've never gone that far, but yes. I have. It's good. Lands packages are probably the packages that include the largest density of cards, but most of them are lands, you can often...
Did you say Courser of Kruphix?
Not Courser of Kruphix.
I would say also... Lands packages are also more than most of these are like these specific cards.
Yeah, like I mean,
a hand attack. I guess.
Like you're already playing Renin 6. You're already probably playing Courser. Tireless Tracker. Like the cards that you wouldn't be playing without the lands package. Like you're not going to play Ramunap Excavator,
Crucible,
Crucible or like Primeval Titan generally, unless you are like playing the lands that it wants. But
yeah.
The thing that's so strong about lands packages are, A, like we just said, half of the permanents you're already playing, and a lot of, like, the opportunity cost of including all of these utility lands is so low, because most of them still do what a land is supposed to do, and it taps for mana.
One caveat to that is, a lot of times, implementing a lands package that is playing a lot of utility lands, sometimes you can only really do it if you already have a really good mana base.
Yeah.
Like, some decks, like, if you're working with a more budget mana base, you may really struggle to effectively implement a lands package that is using utility lands as opposed to just caring about landfall.
Yeah. And generally, you probably don't want to play a lands package in a four-color deck. I did it on Paperlander. When I played Jund, it was originally supposed to be Jund, and I was like, oh, I'll include a lands package because why not? And then I was like, oh, but, I mean, there's, like, blue cards too, and so then I splashed blue, and that's how we ended up with the monstrosity that somehow did
Is that the time we're talking about when you played Jund? Because that was not Paperlander 1.
No, Naya was Paperlander 1.
It absolutely was not.
Okay, this seems very odd. Like, this seems to have no relevance on what we're actually talking about as far as the actual content of this episode goes. Sure. All right, let's unfold this. So I distinctly remember watching me playing against Seth, and I was able to... I think, like, he tried to strip lock me, but I, like, drew, like, a Renin 6 and played it, and, like...
Okay, I thought you were playing Pod.
Okay, Ash, entertain people.
So... here's the thing, you guys. Something that I've really wanted to talk about recently was, I feel like there's a lot of cards that used to be awesome, and I miss them so much. An example of one of those cards is, alright, I tried really hard, and I failed to do so,
I want you to suck it. Because, Paperlander 1, 4-man Canlander mini tournament, Nicholas was on Naya midrange, splashing a lands package.
Man, this is just embarrassing for me.
Alright, we're even now. I got Thrun wrong, you got Paperlander wrong. We're 1-1. Final game of the match.
Alright, GG.
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 I guess we're calling it a draw.
Yeah. Okay, so, do you have anything else to say about lands?
They're good. That's it.
Okay. Pod Chain, also known as Birthing Pod Combo Chain. This is a thing that gets implemented into decks every now and then. If you're me from 2021 and 2020, and a little bit of 2019, I guess, you were way too greedy about it.
And if you're me from those years, you kept trying to tell Ash that he was way too greedy about it.
To be fair, I believed you. I just wasn't going to be stopped.
Oh, man. Abzan creature...
Greedy Jiki.
Yeah, Abzan Greedy Jiki. It was a heck of a ride.
So, if you think about it, Abzan Greedy Jiki is kind of the original alpha version of current day's four-color nightmare stuff.
Sort of.
All right, okay. No, very much so.
Before me and Ash get into a third argument of the episode, I'm going to explain what a pod chain is so that you can understand what we're talking
about. I'll do it. Okay. You talked about
Ash
the lands.
Ash is going to explain a pod chain, and then we can continue our argument.
All right, I feel like these arguments are much easier when I can actually see your face.
Yeah. Generally, we don't record together. Today, we are. I don't know if you can tell from audio differences, but... that's welcome. Why we're a little more argumentative.
Listen, you got that smirk on your face.
All right, explain a pod chain.
So a pod chain is when you take a birthing pod and you activate it, sacrificing a creature of, we'll say, CMC2 for the time being. That's the start. That's the base. Three? What do you? I'm going the easiest version right now. So sack a 3-drop.
Yeah, sack a 3-drop because...
I was going to go like the original... like,
yeah, start with a 3-drop because that's the easiest to fit into decks.
You're right. We'll
go from there.
Are we ever going to explain this? Shut up. Listen, you start with a 3-drop, you sack it to your birthing pod and go get a Felidar Guardian, which you will blink your pod with. Then you will pod away your Felidar Guardian to go get a Karma Guide, which will bring back your Felidar Guardian, which will blink your pod. Then you will sack the Felidar Guardian to the pod again to get a Kiki Jiki, which will blink your Karma Guide, which will bring back your Felidar Guardian, which will blink your Kiki Jiki, which will then make infinite cats. What?
Karma Guide doesn't blink Karma Guide, it makes a copy of it.
Right, that's true. You mean Kikijiki doesn't blink home, okay.
Oh, crap. Now I'm doing it. Yes, Kikijiki copies. It's not relevant.
So you attack with like 8,000 cats in one karma guide.
8,000 is the incorrect number, though.
It's 420,069.69.
I guess that works too. I generally just pull like the most random number that I like. Starting with a billion, I'm like,
can I still all right, Googleplex?
8,726,392.5.
You technically have to identify a number. You can't just say infinite.
Yes.
Anyways, so that is the basic chain. Most decks don't just want to draw Kikijiki and Karmic Guide and Felidar Guardian. Nightmare Saw does, I guess, but most decks don't want to. So, like if you're already playing Birthing Pod, which a lot of decks value Birthing Pod quite a lot, that's great and all, but it doesn't necessarily mean you want to play a combo chain off of it. You might just want to play a value deck with it, just to get specific, you know, toolbox pieces. Now, what we were alluding to earlier, you can actually go from a one drop if you're playing blue in your deck, or if you just are just playing the blue cards for the combo, and then you really don't want to draw them. That'd be very bad. But you can go from a one drop to Corridor Monitor, which untaps your pod. Pod that into a Pestermite or a Deceiver Exarch, which untaps pod, and then you have a three drop and you do the thing we already said.
It is worth noting, if you're including a pod package in your deck, and it's not a dedicated pod deck, you absolutely should not be playing Corridor Monitor or Pestermite. If you are already playing those cards in your deck, you should just be playing a dedicated pod deck.
At that point, you just also play Splinter Twin, and half the cards we mentioned win the game with Splinter Twin.
Yeah, if you're playing those cards, you're playing Four Color Kiki Pod. You can't tell me otherwise.
You're just playing a bad list.
Yeah, but the pod chain, generally, it can be very powerful because you can just win out of nowhere. But like Ash said, like there's a lot of decks that don't want to just be drawing those cards. So generally, you don't want to include those cards unless your deck is already trying to abuse like creature ETBs. Like that's the big one, especially like initiative now. It's really easy to slot a pod chain into an initiative deck because if you Felidar Guardian to blink your White Plume Adventure, that's super solid. Yeah, that's solid. You Karmic Guide to bring back your like Thrag Tusk, good on you. Kikijiki copying a seasoned Dungeoneer, you're probably winning the game.
Yeah, and a big thing like along with that is that deck, those kind of decks don't actually hate drawing those pieces, because even if I'm not doing anything with this Felidar Guardian, if I just draw a Kikijiki, uh-oh, good game.
Yeah. I would say generally if you're including a pod package, you want to at least be able to cast Felidar Guardian and Karmic Guide. Like we said earlier, Ash has tried many a list that just can't cast Kikijiki.
Wait a minute, I just realized something. Felidar Guardian and Splinter Twin go infinite, but they're all tapped, because you can blink the Splinter Twin and put it on the new one.
Yeah, but they're all tapped. If you have, like...
Sorry, I just, like, was in my own wall for a second.
If you have a Soul Sister, then you gain infinite life.
What about a Blood Artist?
I mean, then at the end of turn... You
sack them at the end of the turn, they die.
Yeah, at the end of turn, they all die. welcome to Ash and Nicholas brew a really bad deck.
No, okay, you know what's going to happen? Grant is going to hear what I just said, and Grant is going to go build something weird.
I've played... So, my very first introduction to Kiki Pod was a... terrible Nile. So
this was 2017 or something.
So this was 18. Nicholas when he had no spending money. My budget was non-existent. But I was fascinated with the idea of pod deck. So naturally, I was going to build a pod deck.
It just started off as ETB, right?
No, it was pod.
Okay.
Like the game plan was to Kiki Pod. But I was not playing blue, so I was not playing any of the Pestermites or anything. But I was playing... it was a lot more ETB, because that was all I could afford.
Like Nia Blink.
Because I built it out of my collection, and I had a couple of ETB Commander decks, and I had a Soul Sisters modern deck. So I was playing both of the Soul Sisters and, or I guess all three, like the two white ones and the green one.
Were you playing Suture Priest?
No.
Okay.
The amount of games I won off of Restoration Angel, Felidar Guardian, plus Soul Sister, just like blinking them, like blinking back and forth. It's like kind of absurd, and I've been tempted to revisit that deck just because of the nostalgia of like the chaos. Like, obviously it'd be a better version of that deck, but like playing all of the like Soul Sisters and stuff and just focusing more on getting the ETBs and just having like the combo win.
Oh, that'd be pretty cool.
And that would be a deck that could play a pod chain, even though it might not, like, that might not be game plan A.
It's kind of game, it's like game plan 8.5.
Yeah, it's 8.5. There's two game plan, okay. Well, no, that should be game plan A, but I would build the deck to make that game plan B, because I somehow want Soul Sisters, which there is a Soul Sisters deck in Canlander.
It's actually, but that's better than people think it is.
But that's, I wouldn't go that deep. Basically, don't brew this deck. I mean, if you want to, you can. It's going to be bad.
If you do, tweet me.
Yeah, yes,
do or that. Send it to me on Discord.
Also that. Join our Discord so you can send the list once you've brewed it.
The links are in the description. I just pointed down like they can see me. Do you want to talk about the next
one? Yeah. So the last package that we're going to talk about is probably the most straightforward one. It's like just a non-basic land hate package. And Blue Moon is a really good example of a deck that utilizes this really well.
The whole thing?
You're just playing Blood Moon, Magus of the Moon, back to basics, and usually Price of Progress. And you kind of have to alter your deck in a way that you are playing more basics than you maybe would if you weren't playing these cards. But these are just cards that can kind of win the game on their own. And if you're playing against certain decks that are not well prepared for them, it's really hard to win through a Blood Moon when you're on, like, four color, no red
shenanigans. Now, I would say the biggest downside to this kind of package is there are some matchups where these cards are completely dead. Like, just completely dead. If you go up against another deck that would maybe play one of these, you have blank pieces of cardboard. Well, Magus the Moon at least has power, I guess.
Yep. And, like, Price of Progress sometimes can, like...
Sometimes it's, like, Flame Rift.
Yeah, it's, like... Yeah.
So, you know, it's not great, but it's there, you know? So, it's weird. But, oftentimes, these are, like, haymaker cards. But
yeah.
Like we've been saying about a lot of the earlier packages we talked about, they're pretty meta-dependent if you're going to play them or not.
Yeah, I'd say out of all of the ones that we've talked about, this is the most meta-dependent package.
Yep, I would agree. That's all we have written down here. I think there's probably some other packages that we're not thinking of.
I guarantee we've missed, like, there's probably going to be someone that's like, oh, you missed these, and like lists like 20 in the comments. So if there's enough that we missed, we might do a part two, but...
Yeah, I mean, if there's enough... I would be pretty embarrassed if we...
Yeah, if we missed that many. I mean, I feel like at a certain point... I'm sure we missed
at least one.
Yeah, I feel like we missed at least one and then, like, a bunch of really fringe, like, things. Like, when we were... Do cantrips count? I mean, kind of, but not really.
Because there's not a meta you bring in cantrips.
Yeah, there's, like, a bunch of, like, really fringe ones. Before we started recording, we were, like, talking about the packages. And I was like, I mean, there's an argument to be made that, like, if you're playing in Snaring Bridge and Bottled Cloister, but, I mean, that's not... a thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't really say that. I guess, like, no, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Do you want to talk about your record the past week?
I do, actually. So, last couple weeks, this last week I played the deck I played for Paperlander number 9, so I'll keep that one a secret, just in case it hasn't come out yet. Spoilers, it was cool. But for like 3 or maybe 4 weeks before that, I was playing Paradox Academy, which I, ahead of that, I hadn't played in quite a while. And the deck performed really well every week, really. I prized, like, I was sitting at the top tables pretty much every day. one time I played against somebody, and I'm not really sure why, but my deck just kind of drew up this way. I drew it up like mono gray ramp. So I just like drew a bunch of rocks and colorless lands and just like looped an Urza Saga for a while and then just like beat to death. And he was like, I have no idea what's going on. And then next game, I played like a turn three Paradox Engine and then proceeded to Paradox. Like I cast like three or four wheels. And he was like, oh, okay. that was fun. But played a lot of Paradox. It all went really well. Paradox is a really fun deck. If you're not playing it because you don't have a Mishra's Factory or a Candelabra, or sorry, a Mishra's Workshop. Mishra's Workshop, or if you don't have a Mishra's Factory, they're a quarter. but if you're not playing it because you don't have a Mishra's Workshop or a Candelabra, play it anyway. You do not need those as bad as you think. The most important expensive card in that deck is buy and, like, you know, easily it's Tolarian Academy.
Yeah.
I don't even think I was playing Crypt. I did Soaring. So
yeah, I think you were on like Tinker, Soaring. It was
Tinker, Soaring.
Crop Rotation, Academy, and Vault.
Was that on Vault? I might have been on Vault. Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah. So, you know, give it a try. The deck's really fun.
Yeah.
Also, a lot of the expensive cards in that deck go into every other artifact deck, just about.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of those cards also go into Fair Academy decks, Eggs, other stuff.
I really want to play like a Wurza Fair Academy.
I want to play like, yeah, like big artifact mid-range, yeah, where you're not...
That's just Wurza. It's like a kind of toolboxy,
yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah, like toolbox, yeah, exactly. It's like creature combo, but, or not creature, it's like creature toolbox, but
minus all the creatures?
Yeah, you just cut the creatures and replace them with artifacts and planeswalkers that care about artifacts.
And like Urza and Emry and Golos?
Sure. I mean, yes, those are really good.
Sick.
Yeah, so I played Teemer midrange, or Teemer broken cards.
Teemer unfair cards.
Teemer unfair cards. I think I talked about this last recording too, but this is a different week that I played the same deck. Match one, I was against a blue-white control player that's not Ash. Game one, I just won with broken cards. I think there was like an Oko and a Ren and Six, and I mean, it's just, it kills people. Game two, I looked at an opening hand of land, Ragavan, Ponder, and I shouldn't have kept the hand, but I was like, but what if? What if? And then I proceeded to play a Ragavan, it got swords, play a Ponder, it missed, so I shuffled. Didn't draw a land, didn't draw a land, didn't draw a land. Finally drew a land. By that point, it was too late. But I have no regrets. The high roll potential was just too much.
I don't know if it was really high roll as much as just playing the game.
Yeah, sure.
Game, I agree with the potential, though.
Yeah, and the rest of the hand was, like, if I drew the second land, the rest of the hand curved. Like, I had, like, a couple two drops, some three drops.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't a terribly unreasonable keep, but I lost. And then game three, I decided to keep a nice hand of like plenty of lands, but it was relevant that only two of those lands actually made mana in my colors. I think it was like Krakus, Wasteland, Triumph, Fetch, to which I played a Triumph, which got wastelanded, a Fetch that got stifled, and then proceeded to not hit any of my colors of mana for the rest of the game. So I was just sitting there with a Wasteland and a Krakus, like, yeah, I can't cast any of my Teemer cards. So I lost.
Turns out the downside with playing broken Teemer cards is you need broken Teemer lands.
Yeah, unfortunate. Match two, I was against Slivers. Game one was really, really close, but I was able to squeeze through and get it. Game two was extremely aggro. He was super aggro and killed me on like turn four.
Whoa. Slivers was aggro?
Yeah, it was shocking.
Whack.
I didn't know that there was a sliver that gave everything. Is it haste and flying?
Oh yeah, the three drop.
I think, or is it's it a, like two, a drop? Two drop?
It's Cloud Shredder.
Yeah, it was.
I think
it's, I was Cloud, like, Shredder. This card exists. The red white one. Then I died. Yeah, the red white
one. Yeah, that was one of the secret powerful cards in Modern Horizons 2.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, that was Modern Horizons 1.
Killed me.
But like, it was eclipsed by Urza and like Force of Negation.
And then game three, I we was like kind of back and forth. We were both pretty even, and then I cast a Fury, which 3-for-1'd him, and then the game ended. I got that match, and then match 3 was against Ash. And
was I playing Paradox?
Yes, you were on Paradox. Game 1, I had enough counter magic to disrupt him, and then a Dak Faden to steal 2 of his artifacts, and then just won from there. Game 2, I think you killed me on like turn 3. Yeah. It was very fast. You like dumped your hand turn 1 and then cast a Windfall turn 2, and I was like, great. And then,
oh yeah, because you discarded a Baseju and Oko, and then I drew Baseju and Oko. Yeah, yeah, and it was weird.
I think it was a Baseju. Yeah, Baseju and Oko. It was so very sad. And then game 3, I decided if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I used counter magic and Dak Faden to win game 3.
I think I still prized that day, because I think that was a 4-round day.
Oh well, no, I guess that was only 3 rounds.
Did we split that day and then play anyways?
Yes.
Because I'm trying to remember. I feel like I prized when you were there on that deck.
I know you were 2-0 going into that match.
Oh, so I prized so no matter what.
You prized no matter what, but we ended up splitting before the match. Or, no, we didn't split because I was 1-1.
Oh, you got the pair down. Pair up. Pair I up. Got the pair down.
Yes.
Oh, I know and what we did.
We ended 2-1.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
But it was a good day of Magic the Gathering cards.
Yeah, I've wanted to build a team of broken cards.
I actually built the deck because you were like, hey, I want to build a team of broken cards, but I don't want to do it right now, so you should build it.
I was doing something, and you were sitting right where you are, but on the floor.
Yep.
And you were like, Ash, what do I build? And I was like, team of broken cards? You were like, bet.
Yep, that is exactly how it happened.
And then I lost. I will say, I played a couple games against you with blue-white control. It is a garbage matchup on the blue-white side. Like, because, like, a lot of decks, you're like, okay, I can let that sit around for a little bit. But every card you play is just like, oh, this will kill you in 2 turns.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to beat blue-white if you, A, don't keep a 1-land Ragavan hand, or 2, don't get your colored mana wastelanded and stifled.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds about right. Well, anything else about packages? Do you want to, like, quickly summarize them really quick? I mean, just like a lot of the common cards.
I mean, sure.
I mean, I figured like we talked about a lot of them, but just like pretty common hand attack spells are going to be Thoughtseize Inquisition, Duress, sometimes Collective Brutality, and Hymn-to-Tarak. If you're spending points on it, and it's not targeted discard, but you can Mind Twist as well. Yeah. Or just alternate.
Yeah, counter spells. Usually, if you're playing like counter spells, it's like if you're playing a small counter spell package, it's like Counterspell, and then like maybe like a Mana Leak and like a Mystic Confluence and some of the cheaper ones as well.
Yeah, Miscalc. If you're really blue heavy, you might play the Forces.
Yeah, Forces, maybe like a Cryptic Command if you're really blue heavy.
Yeah, and if you're like blue heavy mid range deck, and if you're white, you'll probably play Veto in there. Doan's Veto. Removal, it depends on your colors, obviously, but you're mainly going to be playing the 1 mana ones that kill the cards that mess up your combo or interact with you in a bad way, or the ones like Burn that's a little more versatile that you can like either deal with dorks or blockers depending on what your deck is doing.
Yeah. Urza Saga, you're playing either like Moxen or fast mana, like a Soul Ring, as well as maybe some utility things like Shadow Spear or Pirate Spell Bomb or something.
Yeah. And if you're more aggressive, you'll probably play like the equipments and fast mana exclusively, I would say.
Bowmat Courier.
A
good option.
I've gotten Bowmat Courier off of an Urza Saga many times.
Yep.
Stoneforge or equipment packages. If you're more mid-rangey or in a grindy metagame, you might play the like Cauldra and Batterskull. If you're in a really fast metagame where you're never going to just cast those, you might not play them. But you're likely going to be playing some amount of Sword. So often Sword of Fire and Ice, sometimes some other ones, Jitay, Skull Clamp, Shadow Spear, and Land Sash.
Yep, lands packages, you're playing Strip Mine, Wasteland, other utility lands, things that care about lands entering the battlefield, like Courser and Tireless Tracker, and ways to get lands back, like Renin 6, Ramunov Excavator, and like Crucible.
Podchain, you're going to be playing the untapped creatures, the blink creatures, the Karma Guy and the Kiki Jiki, as well as the Pod. Oftentimes, you'll also see that lined up with a Survival of Fittest as well, where you can just pitch stuff till you get, you pitch Kiki Jiki and all the other combo pieces, and then you just play Karma Guide from your hand.
Yeah. And then finally, non-basic land hate, it's four cards. I mean, I think it's only four cards. Back to basics, Blood Moon, Magus of the Moon, and Price of Progress.
I have seen Ruination in certain prison decks, or like medium red once. I built it with Ruination. And I have seen, it's rare, but some decks will play Anathomancer.
Sure. And if you're really trying to spite Ash, you can play Choke.
Yeah, that'll get me a lot of the time, for sure. All right, well, thank you all for listening to the 10 Points Podcast episode 22. Is that correct?
It's one of the episodes.
My show notes say 22, so I really hope that's correct.
If it's not 22, thanks for listening to one of the episodes near the number 22.
I'm pretty sure it's 22.
It's probably 22.
You know what? You know
we've,
what?
We've been right about everything this episode, so it's, I mean, hey, almost certainly 22.
I'm committing to it. If it's not 22, I will give Nicholas $22.
I'm not going to say no. I mean, I'm not going to reiterate anything on the bet, but I mean, I'll take $22.
Awesome. Well, everybody have a good old day.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the 10 Points Podcast, and don't forget to count your points.